Howdy neighbors, a good afternoon to you. Thank you for being here today. And I see we've got some good Baptists in the back row back there. We do have some front seats up here still, so if anybody wants to make their way on up, be sure and do that. This afternoon, what we're going to try to do over the next 60 minutes is to try to give you a little more information about what is going to be a vitally important issue for the balance of this year, but most certainly for 2016. Gentlemen, why don't y'all come on up and grab a seat, and we'll get started right away. But what we're going to try to do this afternoon, we're going to just have a little bit of an interactive conversation with three really outstanding gentlemen that can give us a lot of information about where we are, where we've been really in 2014 and 2015 in getting this effort together to the point of crossing the finish line, the initial finish line, which was passage in the House and the Senate in Oklahoma City. And now the big race is on to try to get across the finish line with a yes vote on State Question 777. So we're going to talk about that today and talk about how really all of agriculture is going to have to come together here in the state of Oklahoma if we're going to have a chance for success. And we are going to have a great chance for success because I know that our groups are going to come together and really, really do the things that need to be done. Wanted first of all to really start our conversation this afternoon. And by the way, we are going to go ahead and hopefully we'll get a good recording, and we'll have it as a podcast up on our website, Oklahoma Farm Report, in the next few days. And we do have now the language, the official ballot language, up on our website as well that was provided to us by the State Attorney General's office. And very interesting reading. We're going to get into a little bit of that a little bit later on as far as a couple of the elements of what it says and, most importantly, what it kind of means to us when we start talking about compelling interest. And really, I want to start with this whole idea of where we began and go really back to 2014 as well as 2015. First of all, I want to introduce to you State Representative Scott Biggs. State Representative Biggs represents the 51st District, which is the Chickasha area, Grady County area, has some great roots when it comes to agriculture. And Scott, thank you for being here today. And let's talk about 2014. We tried and we didn't quite get there with a right to farm amendment. What happened in 2014?
2014, I had just got elected to office, and the first rep, the first bill I filed was the right to farm for a constitutional question, and that really started the process. At that time in the United States, we'd had one state do something similar. Here we are a couple years later, and we have Missouri who just passed this last year on the ballot, barely passed it, but passed it as well. So it was really a learning curve for me, as well as a lot of people involved the first time around. It made it through the House overwhelmingly, kind of got stalled out in the Senate with some concerns and some questions. So it allowed us over the summer to address those concerns and questions, and what you have now before you in the state question is one that everybody in the ag community agreed to when it was in the House and the Senate, as well as a lot of the people throughout the state. It addressed all of the concerns, and everybody was very happy with the final product.
Fast start in 2015, the State House very quickly took up HJR 1017, and it was passed with a very strong vote and headed on to the Senate. You did have to make some accommodations with some folks that had concerns.
Yes, sir, that's absolutely correct. It passed the House overwhelmingly. I think we had almost 90 votes the first time around, 5 no votes. No changes from what was introduced and agreed to over the summer. From there, it went to the Senate. We had to make some changes for some towns and some cities, as well as the oil and gas industry had some very big concerns. But all those issues were addressed in the Senate, came back to the House, accepted their amendments, and we were off and running.
So with that done, along the way, you were working, obviously, with a lot of folks from within the agricultural community. One of those folks that was at the regular Monday meetings that were set up by Jim Reese's predecessor at the State Department of Agriculture, some of us lovingly called it the Ag Mafia, that meets on Mondays, but they've done a great job in keeping agriculture on the same page. One of those folks, you might hand the microphone down to Roy Lee. Roy Lee Lindsay has been executive director of the Oklahoma Pork Council since the end of 1998. has been involved in a lot of the very interesting tug of wars at the state legislature regarding our pork industry and it coming in on a commercial basis in our state. So you've kind of been through some of these battles before, Roy Lee, and we had some interesting conversations, I know, within the agricultural groups as we came together and got to one mind as the lawmakers were doing the same thing.
We did, Ron, and I think it's I've long believed that when agriculture in the state of Oklahoma decides to work together throughout the capital, there's probably not a more powerful group than that group. When we can all agree on where we need to be and what we need to be doing on an issue, we can generally get it done. There was never a disagreement amongst the groups about the concept of right to farm. I want to be very clear, and so everybody, I don't want anybody thinking that there were groups that were opposed to the idea of what right to farm is going to do for us. Did we have questions about the best way to accomplish those things? Absolutely. And when you put groups, you know, you just think about the personalities and the groups involved, whether that's, you know, lots of folks would question, can you really get the cowboys and the pig guys to work together on something? Sometimes you got to figure out how to work through what those challenges are. You've got to figure out what was the best way to approach this challenge. And ultimately, we arrived at a place where we believed we needed the time to get our organization put together. We needed time to raise the money that it's going to take to be successful in this effort. And we said, let's get this thing on the ballot and let's move it forward. And we did that with support from wheat growers, Farm Bureau, American Farmers and Ranchers, Pork Council, Cattlemen's Association. Grain and feed was at the table. Wheat was at the table. We all were there together. And that's one of the ways we were able to push this thing on through the Senate, because there were some questions when we started working, especially in the Senate. But it's where we're at today. And at the end of the day, whatever differences we had trying to get to this point, this thing's on the ballot, and nothing's going to take it off the ballot between now and then. So even if you aren't crazy about how we got here, we're here. And our goal is to pass this thing in November of 16. And so it's going to be vital for all of us to be working together between now and then, and everybody doing everything they can to see that we get this thing passed.
Let me jump back to Scott for just a moment, because there was an interesting change from 2014 to 2015. I don't believe in 2014 we had the language compelling interest show up. It really showed up in 2015. How did we get to this particular language? It says that this particular amendment stands unless there is a compelling state interest. How do we get there?
The 2014 version basically said the legislature can't pass any laws whatsoever. And what we felt was, over the summer, the way we looked at it some more and more, there really needed to be a safeguard in place. The castor bean, you know, if I heard castor bean once at the Capitol this year, I bet I heard it 200 times, is a prime example. There's a law in the books banning the growing of castor beans for obvious reasons. Well, it was called into question, if we pass this as it was originally written, does that negate that law and allow people to grow castor beans in their front yard? That shouldn't be the case. You know, is there a compelling state interest not to allow castor beans that form ricin, you know, to be grown out in the public? Yes, there is. So the compelling state interest was borrowed from some other language in some other statutes dealing with administrative rules, agency rules, like Department of Ag rules. They can pass those in an emergency if there's a compelling state interest. So we didn't reinvent the wheel with that term. We just copied some language from some other statutes that's currently in place. And
okay. Ron,
there's quite a few other people around the room. Mr. Roy Lee mentioned a few other names, but I know, looking out here, I see Senator Justice, Representative McPeak, Representative Pfeiffer, Blaine Arthur with Department of Ag. You know, at the Capitol, there was a lot of those groups, but a lot of the individuals you see sitting around the room here had a very active role in helping pass this as well.
So. Right. Now, we just have the Attorney General, is just at the end of the month of June, 1st of July, finalized the language of the ballot initiative. Let me read just a couple of key highlights, if I could, for you to let everybody get on the same page, and then I want to bring Senator Coffey in here in just a moment. But the ballot title for State Question 777 will mean that it creates the following constitutional guaranteed rights to engage in farming and ranching: the right to make use of agricultural technology, the right to make use of livestock procedures, the right to make use of ranching practices. It goes on to say that these constitutional rights receive extra protection under this measure that not all constitutional rights receive. This extra protection is a limit on lawmakers' ability to interfere with the exercise of these rights. Under this extra protection, no law can interfere with these rights unless the law is justified by a compelling state interest, a clearly identified state interest of the highest order. Additionally, the law must be necessary to serve that compelling state interest. Now, it goes on and mentions the fact that primarily property rights are not infringed by this constitutional amendment. There's laws that impact trespass, eminent domain, dominance of mineral interest, easements, right-of-way, or any other property rights, and any state statute or political subdivision ordinances enacted before December 31st, 2014. A lot of that language in those exceptions, Scott, that was really put in there to accommodate some of the concerns during your lawmaking process, right?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Coffey is our third party here today. He was in a very historic time in Oklahoma legislature, in that he was the man that became really coming from a minority party to a majority party in our state Senate. First Republican to serve as the president of our state Senate and served as Secretary of State. So he's got a lot of experience in dealing with a lot of issues in and around the legislature, in and around the executive branch. And he's going to be helping the coalition, the agricultural groups that are coming together to get on the same page, to get to that point where we're ready to get that yes vote out. And Senator Coffey, how do we do that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. And let me start by saying, Michael, thank you for the kind invitation to be a part of this and to all of you to listen to this important issue today. I think the answer to how do we do that, the two most important things are find people to give their time and to give their money. It's going to be an expensive issue. We saw in other states that there are other groups that don't think this is a good idea. And even if they aren't from Oklahoma, they don't live here or maybe don't do business here, they still are going to spend money to influence voters in Oklahoma. And so we're going to have to raise money to put on a very aggressive campaign. We'll have high-quality media, social media, and try and hire the very best to get the word out to folks to understand that this is simply just a constitutional amendment to protect Oklahoma's farmers and ranchers from unreasonable government intrusion, what every Oklahoman wants, whatever their business is. And we also need people's time. This is not about putting forward any one individual, any one group. This is about Oklahoma agriculture. And I firmly believe that we have to win this. And there are some people who think, well, why wouldn't it pass in Oklahoma? And that's a reasonable question. But I think given enough money behind a message, somebody cannot tell the truth. They can misrepresent the facts and confuse people. And if that goes unanswered, we could find ourselves in trouble. And if we don't do our job, and if we're not successful, and if we don't have that concern, I don't think they'll ever leave our state. They'll be pestering farmers and ranchers and drive up food costs for consumers in the names of things that sound very noble to other people, but what the real cost is to our way of life here in Oklahoma. So I think it's critical that we all lock arms and find a way to move forward.
Roy Lee, let's talk a little bit about Missouri. You've got a lot of your colleagues in the Missouri pork industry. They were part of the group that came together for a yes vote in Missouri just a little over a year ago now, and they really got themselves into it. It was a hard fight, as we had HSUS, among others, come in very aggressively against their particular petition.
Yeah, we hope that we've learned some lessons from what what happened in Missouri as they worked through it. The final ballot in Missouri passed by like 0.1%. Just barely get it over the finish line, if you will, as they worked through it. And one of their challenges initially was exactly what we dealt with as we worked through this, is how do we build our coalition? How do we bring our groups together? Once they got everybody on page from an agriculture perspective, their challenges came primarily in the urban centers of Missouri. And so when you think about Kansas City and you think about St. Louis and the size of those communities, it's a telling thing for us to see and to learn from, because we're going to have some of the same challenges with Oklahoma City and Tulsa, because those are folks that are so far removed from the farm, they are so far removed from what we do, they just look at it and go, don't you have the right to farm now? Why do I need to vote yes? And so it's going to be imperative for us, as Glenn talked a few minutes ago, about the resources we're going to need to put those to put the information in front of folks so they become educated about what we're doing and why it's important. And what are those audiences? And so we think we've learned some. I think the compelling state interest question was not in the Missouri language, I don't believe. And it was one of the things they got hit with as they were trying to put their question on the ballot and get it approved. So we added that language. I think we're using some of the same consultants and working with some of the same folks that worked on that campaign. So I think we learned a great deal from that. But we do know that agriculture raised a bunch of money in Missouri and needed every penny of it.
Okay. Scott, let's jump back real quickly to your personal and the lawmakers that you work with at the state capitol. Why was this important in your mind so much to put your personal capital and your personal integrity, you know, everything that you've got on the line to get this thing across the finish line?
The simple answer for that for me has always been, you know, if you look around Oklahoma, I mean, if you raise your hand, how many of you are second-generation farmers? How about Mr. Dietrich? You could see the third or fourth generation. Any fifth or sixth? Farming and ranching has been in Oklahoma for generations just like this. You know, when I walk out in the barn and I take my daughter to go feed the ponies before I drop her off at daycare and go to the Capitol, I want her to have the exact same opportunities to farm, to ranch, to show cattle, show horses, walk out in the wheat fields that we have right now. And if we don't do something to protect that, we're going to lose it. You know, if you look at the Capitol this year, we had five HSUS-sponsored bills that got filed by senators and representatives. We had some of the comments about the right to farm was, you know, I don't eat meat, so ag's not important to me, so why should I vote for this? I mean, there's a more growing disconnect from the farming and ranching, like Roy Lee said. So I believe completely is important, because I want to be able to see my daughter. I want to be sitting here, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now, and see her enjoy the farming and ranching just like we do today. And that's why I believe it's just as important now.
Senator, let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the early strategy. In other words, we're starting to see meetings. I know we've been having really meetings since the passage of the legislation. The groups have started to talk about what needs to be done. I know that we've got some early things. We've got some bumper stickers for everybody to be able to pick up and take home today. But what is the early, in other words, we're way out. Are we too far? Are we going to peak too soon? Or, you know, what's the advantage of starting right now?
Well, you know, I'd say it's kind of an upside. You know, it's kind of a curve. Right now it needs to be really intense, because we need to get the word out and get volunteers and talk to folks in our towns, in our communities, in our organizations, and let them know this question's coming and you need to be aware of it. But I think it's also very important to raise money now. I'm under no illusion that this is going to scare them off, that if we raise enough that they won't play here. I'm convinced they're going to play here, and we've got to be ready, and we've got to do our program and not worry about that, because it'll be late money. But the more that we can raise now and get people invested in it, and so that we can make plans, so that we can get the organization and the structure together, start budgeting, that helps. So it's critical to start the fundraising now. A lot of organizations are going to be meeting all around the state this fall, and you're going to have your regional meetings and your local meetings. And so this is the time to get the word out This group's not going to be meeting again until this time next year as a group. And, that's going to be right closer to, we're going to be in the thick of it. So we're just trying to, and listen, we know that you got other issues and we know that you have other priorities, but we would just ask that it would be and this, because this is too critical not to put at the forefront and to mention and the right to farm issue. State question 777, we've got to get that in people's minds and get people talking about it so that we have a lot of momentum going into when they start going on the airwaves and misrepresenting the truth and saying that this is about corporate farming. It's not. Saying that we already have a right to farm, we don't. That's why this legislation passed. They're going to say that it's going to undo all the regulations related around agriculture. That's not true either. They're going to say all kinds of things that misrepresent the facts. And so we've got to have as much steam rolling our way when we go into the election in 2016 as possible, I think.
Really, give us a couple of examples of the type of practices in your industry that might be protected from somebody challenging your farmer's ability to do business.
Well, I think we very clearly you've seen across the country when these activist groups have come in with ballot questions of their own in other states. We saw it with Proposition 2 in California that dealt with gestation stalls and layer cages. You saw it in Arizona. We saw in Florida. Florida was really the first try, if you will. We think about technology and practices on the farm. You know, today, one of the things that we hear repeatedly is that we castrate pigs without the use of anesthesia. And we know that we do that. But do you know that there's not, and we're always criticized, I guess, for no pain medication, but there's no pain medication approved for use in pigs. We're being attacked for doing something that we're not allowed to do. So that's the kind of logic that we're dealing with. At some point, and when I say this, I think to this point, the cattle industry's been fortunate that, if you'll forgive me, it's not been your ox that's being gored, if you will. But your time's coming. This has been a lot of attention on poultry industry, especially on egg production and layers. Lots of attention on the pork industry. But the time's coming that it's going to be all of agriculture that's in the same boat. And that's why it's so important for us to work together and be together and present a unified front on this as we go. You all think about, we think about the use of new technology as it relates to crops and as it relates to how do we feed more people. You all know how many people you're feeding today. You've got an idea of what you're producing and what that means to the world. But when we start talking about how do we feed a world with 10 billion people in it by 2050, if we don't have modern technology and modern production practices, we'll never get there. And these are folks that really want you back in the days 50, 60, 100 years ago, we want all our pigs outdoors. Well, I assure you, the sows today in our barns out in northwest Oklahoma are a heck of a lot happier in that 80-degree barn than they would be outside in 105-degree heat. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about, the use of modern production practices. In any other business, we applaud companies when they make progress in terms of technology, when they make progress in terms of innovation, and in agriculture, we vilify it. I don't know why that is, but I know that's what happens. And this resolution, when we can get this passed and into effect, amendment to our Constitution, is going to give us some protection to let us keep pushing forward with some of that technology.
And of course, the conversation of yesterday about the Veterinary Feed Directive, antibiotic use in animal agriculture, you know, these are things that impact the beef industry most certainly as well. So you're right. The beef industry is going to have a lot of practices that could be challenged down the road. I know that one of the things that's been said to me more than once by Michael, by Roy Lee, by Tom Buchanan from Farm Bureau, by Terry Dietrich, is that they're not worried about the legislature that Scott is in right now. We're not worried about the lawmakers that are there today. But it's a generation or two down the road that as we get more and more of an urban population, that is driving the electorate, that's driving the elections, that we could end up with lawmakers that would be willing, a lot more willing to listen to a humane society of the U.S. or other similar group, and to take care of what they perceive to be a problem in how we handle our livestock, how we raise our crops, how we actually interact with neighbors out in rural areas of our state. So all of that is a part, I know, of Right to Farm, State Question 777. At this point, you've said, and I'm about ready to open up for questions, so if you've got a question, put your thinking hat on that, and we'll get a microphone around to you as we do that. But, Senator, you know, when you think about the early conversations you've had with our groups, everybody on the same page at this point?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's good to know. What questions do we have? Got one right ahead in the middle.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. What an elite group we have as a panel today. My question would be directed to Mr. Coffey, if we could, please. And I know we're talking and speaking to the choir today in this group, but we also know that a lot of things changed in California when the bill failed. Whenever that happened, egg prices, because of the regulations that put on poultry, went up four times what they were. California lost an awful lot of their pork industry because of that. And just today I found out that, and Oklahoma's gotten some of that, I found out that some of the dairies that come from California are now in Oklahoma. So that's what happens when it passes. When it fails like it did in Missouri, HSUS left, same way in North Dakota. When it failed, they left and left them alone. So my question is, and knowing that HSUS is ready to put $5 million into this campaign to make it fail, what's it going to cost Oklahomans to make this pass?
I think it's all we can raise and then some is the short answer. But I think we've got to raise similar dollars. We've got to be able to compete where they spend money. If they spend it on TV, we've got to spend it on TV. If they spend it on radio, we've got to do the same. Social media is becoming so important, and we're seeing that in all campaigns for state questions and candidates all over the country. So $4, $5, $6 million is not out of the question of what it's going to take to get things done. And that goes to the point of Ron's question earlier, why are we starting now? That's exactly why. We need to see what we can put in the bank early so we can make plans and budget.
I might add, Keith, on that, one of the folks that I've talked to in regards to the cost has worked with one of our senators' campaigns, a statewide race, similar situation. He says, we have an advantage in agriculture because we have groups like AFR and Farm Bureau and cattlemen and wheat. We've got the Livestock Marketing Association. We've got groups that give us a lot of a grassroots infrastructure that a political campaign has to go out and build it. Or they have to rely on the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, as the case may be. But we've got infrastructure. A key is that we're on the same page and we're able to work together. And I know that's one of the reasons, Senator, they've got you working with them to try to help inspire some unity along the way. So I know that our infrastructure is pretty important, isn't it?
It's critical. We have to get the word out to folks that we know and turn them out to vote. It's going to be a presidential election, which means it's a higher turnout. There's other state questions that are probably going to be on the ballot, and that may influence the turnout. But the way you win an election is you turn your voters out more than the other side does. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to put – and the way you do that is grassroots. Every county is going to have a leader, and every precinct is going to have a leader. And we're going to have to do everything we can on to be ready so that when we turn out the vote, when the absentee ballots start, that we're way ahead of the curve on that.
They turn a few pickup trucks into getting some folks to the polls. Michael.
Thank you. Representative Biggs has done a great job of running this thing. He's been very tenacious and very easy to work with. It's going to be an emotional vote. They're not going to play on logic or realism. It's going to be about emotions. That's what they're going to play to. One of the things we noticed early with Scott and some of the rest of us was one of the things they'll do is they'll try to make it political, don't you think, Scott, where they'll pit Democrat and Republican. Our own groups within Oklahoma have to be careful not to allow that to happen. Your response to that?
You're absolutely right, and for those of you who don't know, that's Representative Jerry McPeak from over in eastern Oklahoma. He's one of my biggest allies. You know, when I went to the Capitol, you hear, oh, you're a Republican, there's some Democrats, you can't, you know, it's going to be tough. No, this is a prime example of where, when it comes to issues of agriculture, like you've mentioned, it doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, urban, rural, agriculture is too important for Oklahoma for us not to get along, and that's exactly what's happened to get the bill to this place. Now, moving forward, it's absolutely going to be political. We have the benefits of seeing what they did in Missouri, you know, how they pitted one side against the other. I mean, that's exactly what happened when we had it come up for the other House vote. You know, the House Democrats, the rural Democrats came out and did a letter of support, even though their state party came out against it, because they saw the benefit. And that was the HSUS tactic, and that's exactly what they did in Missouri, and that's exactly what they've done here. Now, once it passed the House, they did their press release and said, we'll double down our efforts in Oklahoma, and we'll see you probably about 10 days before the election is what they did in Missouri. So it's political, but at the same time, it's agriculture, so we all believe in ag.
I know that State Representative Copeland was quick to get a release out praising and supporting the House Joint Resolution. I know that was important.
I've seen what HSUS has done before the horse industry, and I know they use dirty tactics. We need to do dirty tactics back to them. As is, what if we don't pass this bill? Well, the people in Oklahoma don't be able to eat. I mean, it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a fight. Missouri, if I'm not mistaken, the counties in St. Louis and Kansas City were the only ones that passed. So there's going to be our biggest hang-up in the big cities, Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
It was largely urban and rural as far as they had pretty large negative votes in several of those Kansas City and St. Louis precincts, and then I know some very large positive votes in a lot of the rural counties. So we saw that trend in Missouri. I don't know if we'll see that in Oklahoma as well, but probably pretty likely, right?
And even on the House side, when this bill was up before in the House, we saw that same thing. But fortunately for us, a lot of the Oklahoma City reps, a lot of the Tulsa reps, same for the Senate, I'm sure Senator Justice could tell you, they see the benefit in ag. I mean, we kind of had a trifecta. We had our attorney general investigating them for their fraudulent fundraising here in Oklahoma when they preyed upon the tornado victims. That was under investigation. At the same time, they were suing to make sure the Oklahoma City Zoo couldn't get their new elephants from Seattle. That was their group trying to make sure that didn't happen. So it was really a perfect storm when it came to the House floor, because the Oklahoma City people saw exactly what they were doing, affecting the zoo, affecting the tornado victims, and it's passed. But that doesn't mean, you know, they'll vote for it again the second time around, and that's why we need to get involved right now.
Other questions? Right up here.
Hold on just a second.
Let Michael get to with your microphone.
We're hearing about the opposition from HUS and the ones outside Oklahoma. Who's our biggest threat inside Oklahoma?
The groups that were opposed to this, and some of them ran about $50,000 worth of TV ads when it was in the House and the Senate, was Humane Society of the United States, PETA, Sierra Club, were three national organizations. On the state level, the only group we had actively opposing us was the Tulsa Municipal Water Authority, and that was because their board of director had some HSUS people on it, and their lobbyist was taking their lies, hook, line, and sinker, and opposed to it. And that was the only opposition, organized opposition, we had at the Capitol from inside Oklahoma.
All right. Back here in the back.
Ron, I've got a question. It's not to this illustrious panel. It's to each one of us. You know, we're probably the most blessed people my age and younger, at least for a ways, is the most blessed generation. this country has probably ever had. 99% of us in here are not going to have to worry about what Representative McPeak, Representative Biggs, and the other good folks at the legislature are going to do to us. My question is not to them. My question is to each of us. And right now, we better be making a decision. We can't put it off. What are we going to do? How important is it to each of us that our kids and our grandkids can have the same privilege that we enjoy today? I just want to leave us with that question. Today is the day of decision. Thank you.
Other questions?
Ron, one question while folks are thinking. We've talked a lot about animal agriculture, and Roy Lee made some great comments about all of agriculture. We're seeing a movement across our country to label and mandate labeling, specifically of GMO. This group, a strong policy on government-mandated labeling, we're very much in favor of voluntary labeling. If you do a voluntary label, then I, as a producer, have an opportunity to let the consumer pay for something they perceive as value. If you mandate the label, then I've got to pay for it to give it to the consumer. How does this help us regarding our friends? And I'd ask any of the panel to address it. Roy Lee, you could do a great job, or Scott or Glenn, either one. But how would this measure help our crop friends in terms of some of the ideas to label GMO-type products?
As you know, Mr. Kelsey, you're very involved there at the Capitol. You do a great job representing your organization. There has been a mandatory GMO bill filed for the past 3 years. As soon as session got out this year, we was very critical of some people on my committee that we refused to even give that bill a hearing for the mandatory GMO labeling, and was very critical that we pass that bill next session, which I don't see that happening whatsoever. But there is the definite push to make sure that's the case. I just got back from the Southern Legislative Conference, where they had an ag policy roundtable and discussions about ag laws in all the other states. I went there to talk about the right to farm and what Oklahoma is doing for agriculture. I took some of my friends and colleagues, and it was a sad state for me to see what other states are doing when it comes to GMO labeling, when it comes to production agriculture, when it comes to we shouldn't use water for irrigation because that water should be used for cities. And that's coming from a house ag person, you know, in a different state. Agriculture is in a difficult time right now. You know, it's at a turning stone, and it's going to take people standing up and making sure the future generations have exactly the way we have it now. And your GMO labeling is definitely going to help the crop producers, because visiting on my way back with some friends from Arkansas, and they put on some of their stuff GMO free. Well, you know, your rice is GMO free. That's not one of the 7 GMO products. And he goes, it doesn't matter. Our prices, our product, our sales increase 15% when we put that GMO free on the bag. And it's just, you know, that was voluntary. That's what producers want to see, because they're getting a black eye right now. And so as far as the GMO labeling bill, I'll make sure I never allow that to pass out of the committee. But at the same time, I may not be there 20 years from now. And that's why it's vitally important we put this protection, because if this was in place, you can't pass a mandatory GMO labeling bill unless it's a compelling state interest. And a compelling state interest has been defined health, safety, or welfare of the public. So unless it's going to, you know, kill somebody, you know, and impact the health of the public, you can't pass a law like that. And that's why this protection is so important.
Raleigh, do you want to weigh in on how some of our crop folks may view this particular measure?
Well, I would hope they would view it as very positive. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we keep looking for new ways to get more corn, to produce more beans, to raise better wheat. We don't have any GMO wheat today as far as that goes, but we do with corn. We do, you know, I read a really long article the other day. I think it was in Slate magazine that was talking about GMOs. It was talking about where BT corn came from. And I don't know if you all knew this. I didn't realize this, but it came from the fact that we figured out that the Bacillus thuringiensis or whatever it is, was a bacteria that would keep bugs off the corn. And so we started spraying the corn with the bacteria. That's how we started with BT corn. And then they figured out that they could take one little piece of the protein from the DNA of the bacteria and breed it into the corn, and it would have the same effect as spraying the corn with the bacteria. Smaller amount of the bacteria are used. You're going to ingest less of it than you would have otherwise, and it does the same thing for us. And yet you got folks out there telling you that we are poisoning ourselves as we try to use GMO-type crops. We've been doing it in nature forever. We're using a smaller amount of the bacteria. We're now using less pesticide to help control those bugs or whatever it may be within our corn products. And yet we got folks telling us that that's a bad idea. I don't know what the next technology will be, like BT corn or Roundup Ready beans, but there's one coming. And if you're raising corn or you're raising beans, you tell me that you want to go back to the time when you lose half your corn crop to bugs, or when you lose your bean crop to weeds. Tell me that's where you want to go, because I just don't think that's where we want to be. So I am hopeful and expecting our grain guys to be saying, hey, this is a good deal for all of us too.
You know, we saw the presentation that Cameron from JBS had this morning. Some of the things he had on the screen, you can go down the street. You can make a stop before you leave Oklahoma City at Whole Foods, or you make a stop at one of the local Chipotles, and you'll see some of the things that he was showing on the screen. They're there in real life right here. And we've got consumers that are buying into that type of logic. And they are very skeptical about anything we do regarding technology with agriculture. So that's the type of attitude that we will be battling. That will be the questions that are going to be raised. And it'll be good as the coalition works together to maybe get some talking points out first to the groups and then to individual members, so that you'll be able to answer some of the questions about these three specific rights that this particular state question will give us. 777 has three different specific rights, as we mentioned earlier, and it'll be good for you to be able to defend them when you go to church or you meet somebody at lunchtime at the local cafe, because there's a lot of folks that you interact with that simply don't know a lot about your business of agriculture, I can guarantee you. Other questions? Okay.
Yes, Senator, you talked earlier about the grassroots being a huge part of this this campaign. How can we volunteer if we want to be precinct captains, get out the vote leaders, things like that, so that we can help spread the message and get the turnout that we need?
You know, that's a great question. You can come to talk to one of us after this program's over and give us a way to contact you. You can go to the website, which I should have memorized, but I don't. Do you have it memorized yet?
On the right to farm. Oh. James has some flyers he'll be more than happy to pass out if you raise your hand.
Just so happens.
So get online and send us an email, and we'll get in touch with you.
And the website is up and running. We've got some videos on there already and some testimonials and some good information. And, of course, a way to actually, I think, make contributions is on there already as well. So right. You can do that online if you care
and
to
Roy
do
Lee,
so.
Just remind me, we've got a Facebook page up, too, if that's
right.
Your social media of choice.
And for those that like to tweet, it's yes on 777 is the Twitter handle. Question is... why do we need this, and who's the enemy?
The enemy is outside special interest groups that want to come in and tell Oklahoma how to operate. They want to come in and tell you and I what's best for us, even though they may live 1,200 miles away and never have stepped foot on a farm. That's the enemy. They're here. They're knocking on the door. They even filed an application to put a monument to eat vegan right next to the Ten Commandments on the capital of the Oklahoma State Capitol. I mean, these groups are coming in here just telling us what they think we should be doing. They're here. That's the enemy. Do we have the right to farm right now? No, we do not. What this does is it puts it in the Constitution. And we've all learned some constitutional questions if you watch the news here lately. If it's in the Constitution, it's very difficult to go against. It's still possible. but it's making it extremely more difficult. It protects it much more so than putting a statute that can be changed 20 years from now. I mean, if you look around the room and, you know, ask your parents, your grandparents, you know, would we have needed a constitutional amendment to have the Ten Commandments displayed at the Capitol, you know, one of the founding influences on our state? 50 years ago, everybody would have laughed at you. Now, you can do that. Don't worry about it. You know, 1940s, there was no way that would ever be the case. Yet, flash forward 50 years, and that's exactly what we're going have to do to have the Ten Commandments at the Capitol. Because people took it for granted that that's always, we can do that now. No one's going to be against that. Just think of what the vision of agriculture is going to be 30 or 40 years from now. We can't sit back and just assume that it's going to be safe, that people aren't going to be challenging us like they are right now. If we put it in the Constitution, it puts so much more safeguards in place for my kids, for my grandkids, for your friends, your family. Moving forward, that's the best place to put it, and the opportunity is right now.
Other questions?
How will State Question 777 address the issue of dust, which we still have a lot of tillage in Oklahoma? I know we're headed toward no-till, but does State Question 777 address in the language the dust? Because that's going to come up as an issue that will affect health in these urban areas. And that's one thing that comes to my mind. It might be more of a problem.
In terms of specific language that addresses dust, no, there's nothing in here that's specific to that. But farming practices, tillage, would be protected just as we've discussed earlier. So if somebody wanted to pass a law through the legislature that limited what days you could plow on or limited when you could plow or what you had to do to reduce dust, they would have to meet that threshold of a compelling state interest for them to be able to pass that law or for that law to be in effect. And if they attempted to do that, we'd have the opportunity to challenge or to say, demonstrate to us, where is the compelling state interest here?
And, of course, remember that dust rules are actually handled by the feds, in this case the Environmental Protection Agency, and clean water or clean air regulations. So this isn't, you know, we're not talking about being able to dictate to Uncle Sam what's going on as far as right to farm or our farming practices, but this protects us at the state legislative level.
Scott, if this does pass and becomes part of our Constitution, would that allow our state attorney general to defend us when those dust rules and no horse slaughter inspection and all this other ridiculous EPA stuff that comes down, would he defend us? I mean, if it's part of our Constitution?
If it's part of the Constitution here in Oklahoma, it's going to apply to Oklahoma laws and stuff that the Oklahoma legislature does. Now, the EPA, as we've seen, Attorney General Pruitt's definitely a friend to agriculture. He's not afraid to sue them. And that's been the case where they're suing them for overstepping their bounds. You know, I kind of laugh and start telling people, you know, when farming and ranching is, you know, the biggest fear is Mother Nature. Yeah, but your number two should be out of control bureaucrats and politicians, because you never know what they're going to give you. Look at the EPA rules trying to regulate dust, or the Department of Labor rules where they tried to limit the amount of hours the family member could work on the family farm. I mean, these rules have been proposed in years past, and they're going to be proposed moving forward. But what this does is it protects Oklahoma agriculture from outside special interest groups coming in, changing our own laws, using our own courts against us, making sure that we have every protection on the state level that we can.
Glenn, how if somebody wanted to write a check today, they're just really wanting to take up Terry's challenge to them today. What do they do about writing a check?
Just walk up to this front table. We got envelopes. We got contributor cards, and then grab a bumper sticker to put on your truck on the way home.
Okay. So, opportunity. I've got them right up here. Chisholm's got these, where you can pick those up. And dollars are going to be needed, folks. We're going to be, I'm sure, challenged before the end of this election cycle. And it's going to be a good opportunity to get ready here in the rest of the balance of this year and the early part of 2016 It was mentioned as a presidential election year. We'll also have a Senate seat, Mr. Lankford's seat that he's holding, that he picked up from Tom Coburn. The full six-year term will be up and will be contested in 2016. So there will be a couple of big statewide races. Other state questions is probably going to be there as well, along with 777. So lots of challenges. Roy Lee?
I want to leave you with just a couple of thoughts that I think are important. When Glenn talked about the amount of money that we need to raise, that seems like that's a really daunting task. And I admit sometimes those numbers are overwhelming. And I'm not asking any one of you to sit down and write us a check for $5 million. We'd take it, but I'm not asking you to do that. But start thinking about this in terms of, I want to give some money, but how do I do it? And what's the easiest way to? I guarantee you, if you want to donate $10 a month, we'll figure out how to bill you $10 a month. If you want to donate $100 a month, or you can give $100 today and $100 in January, we'll take it. So don't get consumed with, I need to write a check, but it's going to be a big check, and I don't have a big check to write today. We'll take what we can get, and, you know, if you were going to write us a $100 check, we can charge you $10 a month for the next 10 months, and we'll get the $100 just the same if it makes it easier for you. So don't get consumed with, gosh, we got to go raise so many million. Let's get consumed with, what can you do individually? What can you do in your community? What can you do with your friends and your peers? That's the easiest way to, you know, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. And that's what we got here, is an elephant. The last thing I want to share with you is a comment that I got from one of our board presidents 15 years ago. We were driving through the panhandle, riding around with a reporter from the Daily Oklahoman at a time when the pork industry was on the front page of the newspaper almost every day. And my president looked over at the reporter and he said, you know, we're really out here just feeding the world. And that used to be a noble profession. I would contend, and I think all of you would agree with me, that it's still a very noble profession. And that we should be proud of what we do, and we should use that pride and that belief that we are doing something noble for the world as we try to sell this state question. The comment was made that we're going to deal with a lot of emotion. We're going to deal with the arguments on the other side aren't going to be based in fact, and they aren't going to be based in science. Great. We've got some emotion on our side too. I think feeding the world is a noble profession. And I commend all of you that do it every day. Be proud of what you do. Use that pride and that belief to help us make this succeed. That's our biggest asset.
State question 777 will be on the ballot November 2016, and the challenge will be to come up with enough votes to make it a yes victory on that election night. And that will be a challenge for Oklahoma agriculture, but one that I believe that we can truly face up to and win. State question 777, tell your friends to vote yes. Michael?
Let's give our panel and Ron Hayes a big round of applause. And on behalf of the Oklahoma Cattlemen, gentlemen, we really appreciate your time today. You've really done a great job of summarizing this issue for us and charging us. We look forward to being an active part of this coalition to move this forward and look forward to a victory in November. We're going to transition into our committee meeting at this point in time. Let's give them one more round of applause, though, as they exit the stage.